Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host is AJ Scholes, who's a great follow at AJScholes24, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. That's near RotoWire headquarters over in Madison, Wisconsin. Partner, we have a little over 3 weeks left in the NHL's regular season, and we really haven't had a chance to take a look at the races in each of the divisions, and I want to do that with you now. Let's begin that look with observations for the division that is furthest from both of us, I guess, and that's the Honda West division, where Vegas and Colorado rule a roost, but a surprise entry in third place that fooled both of us a little bit in Minnesota. And what do you think about the rest of the division and the order so far?
Well, I think obviously, Minnesota being where they are is a bit of a surprise. You know, they're really only 1 point back from Colorado and could definitely challenge for second. Looks like Vegas might be running away a little bit with it for first place, but everybody is still kind of within that range. What's surprising, I think, to me more than Minnesota here, though, is the fact that St. Louis, has struggled so much. And I mean, is there ever a drop off in this? You know, you got the first three. They've already clinched playoff spots, Vegas, Colorado, Minnesota. And then there's, it looks like a 17-point gap between Minnesota and St. Louis. They're in a dogfight with Arizona. You know, technically San Jose could maybe be in the mix there too. But, the drop-off for St. Louis this year, I think, is what surprised me most in the West.
Yeah, I think that's a team, though, that's been to the dance enough times that they know that they don't have to really put their foot down on the pedal all the way down yet. And they're going to coast into the playoffs, get healthier, and be ready to make noise in the postseason. But I do agree with you. It's Minnesota, the surprise entry. I got the California teams on the outside looking in my preseason picks, and that looks like a lock as they're all holding down 6, 7, and 8 spots. So I got that one right. And Arizona finished right about where we thought they would, on the fringe of contention. They still are and could make some noise, but they got to get on a hot streak right away because St. Louis does have those three games in hand, AJ. Over in the Central Division, that's the one that features Carolina, Florida, and Tampa at the top right now. We have to admit a little bit of surprise that Tampa is not running away with this division, and they may not even win this division, AJ, but that's because Carolina and Florida, we figured they'd be pretty good teams here. The surprise for me is Dallas falling off as much as they did. They were the Stanley Cup finalists last year, but they've been ravaged by injury, and that's a big reason why they may be on the outside looking in when the postseason does start. So your observations there.
Well, I thought it was interesting, you know, looking back, we had the exact same top four in this division. In fact, I think the only changes we had were in the bottom seven and eight. I think I gave Detroit a little bit more credit, but, you know, we all kind of agreed, or both agreed rather, you know, Tampa, Dallas, Carolina, and Columbus. Columbus has been abysmal, you know, and we've talked about whether or not they're going to be back with John Tortorella. Florida has been way better than advertised. They're getting net mining that they wanted to. And yeah, you know what? Tampa is probably the most dangerous team in there. The last thing you would want if you're Carolina right now is to have Nashville go on a run here at the end of the season and track them down and have Tampa fall into fourth place. I don't think it'll happen. There's just not enough games left and a 10-point gap there. But it certainly is not looking good for Florida. They're going to want to try and challenge Carolina for that number one spot to avoid getting a first-round matchup with the Lightning, I think.
And then we look at the division that you are following more closely, the Mass Mutual East Division, and the biggest surprise for both of us is Philadelphia dropping off. They're in sixth place right now, and I don't see a path for them to get near the postseason, AJ. We knew this was going to be a dogfight, and a really good team was going to miss the postseason. I just didn't think it was the Flyers, neither did you. And I think you even underestimated your own favorite team, the Penguins, right now at the top of the division. Can they hold on and win the loop? And do you think it's a big deal that they do? This is important to finish first here.
Well, I guess the first thing I'll say on that is, you know, the Flyers drop-off was certainly surprising. You know, I had them winning the division. I think you had them coming in second or somewhere around there.
That's right.
You know, the Rangers, I think we thought would challenge, but not necessarily make the playoffs. And that's exactly where they are. They're only 4 points back of Boston, but Boston has a couple games in hand. And I just don't see them overtaking the Bruins for that spot. As far as the Penguins go, look, you know, being on top of the division is certainly helpful. But what's the reward here? You get the Bruins in the first round. Like that's not a good thing. Maybe the Bruins end up in third and you get the Islanders instead. You know, we saw what they did to the Penguins 2 years ago. So, you know, I don't think winning the division really is that important for them. I think they have the best chance to. They have the easiest remaining schedule of kind of those top three teams. But, you know, Evgeny Malkin famously said when asked about Washington always winning the division, they win division, we win the cup. So, you know, I think, you know, that team, obviously the Penguins have their priorities straight, but it is something to be said. If they could win the division without having Evgeny Malkin for the last month, you bring him back. Plus now having Jeff Carter, I think they have to be on the top of a lot of people's list for contenders this year. Now, can they get out of the first round? That's been a problem the last 2 years. I'll stop pontificating there, Paul, so we can move on to the Canadian division.
I'll just say before we leave this one, though, that the Islanders were the team that surprised both of us in a positive way, and they are going to be a tough out no matter who gets them. It's that defensive structure put in place by, I think, the best coach in hockey in Barry Trotz that is a feature of their play, and I don't know of anybody that really wants to face this team in the postseason at all. In terms of the North Division, look, I'm smiling like the cat, the butcher's dog, rather, and I'm pretty happy that the Leafs have opened up a bit of a gap in their division, and I forecast for the first time in the history of this show, I picked the Leafs to win this division, so they're making me look good on that call, and I thought Vancouver would be a major player, and they've disappointed a little bit, but they have enough time still to make a bit of a run. We had Montreal right where I figured they would be in about fourth place in this division. I thought even have a chance to be higher, so maybe a rating is a bit of a disappointment. The Jets and the Oilers figure to be on a collision course, but Edmonton seems to own them right now, so the four playoff participants are all but chiseled in stone here, but a run by Vancouver could upset things at the finish line.
It would be really like interesting to see Vancouver make like a play for that spot after everybody else is done playing. You know, they've only played 42 games. They have a lot of games in hand. They've got five on Montreal, and it, hypothetically, if they won all five of those games in hand, you're looking at a pair of tied teams at 51 points there. So You know, it would be a bit of a surprise. I don't really expect it, but it's certainly something to keep watching. And yeah, I mean, Toronto has just feasted on this division all season long, and I expect they'll probably continue to do so.
From your lips to God's ears, pal. Am I wrong to suggest that a 56-game schedule with 100% divisional play doesn't give us a good indication of who the best teams really are? I say this because I really got into it with a prominent member of the Toronto media over the past week, and he got pretty feisty at the end of it. I will say I brought it up only because I thought they're playing exclusively against each other in the division, so the standings do mean something in this case. You really have a good idea who the best teams are. And I used the Leafs as an example. They're 8 points clear of the field at the time that we were talking. So I said, well, clearly, they're the best team in the division. And he says, oh, no, Winnipeg's better. Well, the Leafs have beaten Winnipeg 6 of 9 times now, so I don't know how anybody can say that. And you can go around the league in all the other divisions and make a case of the same way when there's a bit of a gap between teams. Certainly in the case of Vegas and Colorado, they're neck and neck, so maybe there isn't a clear leader there, and Pittsburgh's only one or 2 points ahead in their loop. But in the other divisions, I think you have a pretty good idea who the top teams really are.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, the thing about it is, you know, we talked about it a couple times in here. You've got three teams in the West who are significantly outpacing everybody else. You've got the same in the Central, the three teams ahead of, you know, the rest of that division. Even in the East, that maybe you consider that one a little bit tighter, and you don't necessarily know who the top team is there. Like after Boston, yeah, you're probably looking at easily the four best teams, and the same thing in the North. I just think, you know, the one caveat I would put on that is we probably don't really have a good idea of who the best team in the league is. Just because, you know, we haven't had any kind of cross, you know, head-to-head examples. And, you know, I know a lot of people have given, you know, the top, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl, you know, have been asterisked, if you will, on their point production this year because they're playing Ottawa and Vancouver, you know, multiple times. But I still think, you know, to say we know which teams are the best in each division, I think is pretty fair. Based on those significant gaps and the head-to-head nature of the season.
And, I mean, the only thing that can upset that right now is a rash of injuries, and we'll be tracking the player movement as we do each week, and that's a great segue into what we'll do as per usual, go around the league and give you our thoughts on each club. And, AJ, it's your turn to lead off with your thoughts on Anaheim, 8th in the Western Division right now.
Well, you started by saying, you know, rash of injuries could pop up, and nobody took it worse this last week than the Anaheim Ducks, losing Jacob Silfverberg for, you know, 6 months. So you're looking at, you know, that's going to impact next season as well. You know, a couple other guys banged up like Andy Walensky, Josh Manson. You know, the Silfverberg injury, I think, is significant. You know, this season is a dud. I think everybody knows that they're probably going to be pushing for maybe the bottom of the division here or the league here and maybe getting into that that lottery spot. But I think, you know, the fact that you're looking at an injury that's now potentially going to impact next season, even if you do overhaul the team, even if things look better, one of your top, you know, top players, in my opinion, his numbers may be a little bit down this year, but everybody on Anaheim has bad numbers this year. You know, he's been consistently a 40-point guy. It looks like in three of his last six seasons, he missed the 40-point mark by one. So you can confidently say he's a 39-point guy every year for six straight years. You know, and so I think that's the concern for me is that you're not just talking about losing him for the rest of this season. That doesn't matter. You're talking about, you know, potentially not having him in October next year.
Well, AJ, I'm going to go on with Arizona, and they disappointed me last night in a game against San Jose. I loaded up on the Coyotes a little bit, and their goalie got pulled. Typically, my luck of late is seeing goalie pulls with the players that I pick, so a bit of a red flag there when you're trying to win in DFS play. And Kemper, despite the fact he won a start and only allowed 7 goals against in 3 starts last week, he gave up 4 really quickly last night. Phil Kessel continues to roll along, a goal and two assists for him. Alex Goligoski, we've been highlighting him week after week. He's found his offensive game with another three-point week. Michael Bunting has 7 goals in 10 games played now as left winger on the top line. He's had a heck of a debut out here, and in a dress rehearsal, I think he's a lock to be a top six forward for a while, as long as he produces anywhere near there. Lawson Kraus is the guy that's behind him in the pecking order on the left side with another goal last week. So youngsters dotting the forward ranks, certainly a key to the success that they hope to have in the near future. Lane Peterson, another youngster to keep an eye on. He picked up 2 assists last week. They're pretty thin at center. He's getting a look there, so I'd say keep an eye on him. And I'd also like to see Aiden Hill get some more reps in goal with the team, I think, hanging on barely to a playoff spot. I think that ship is going to sail pretty soon, and I hope they do give him a few more looks before the end of the season.
In Boston, it was an inconsistent week for them as they went 2-2. Getting production from the top guys that you would want. Brad Marchand, 2 goals, 1 assist. Pasternak, 1 goal and 2 assists. Getting production out of Taylor Hall as well. But boy, do you have to feel bad for Jeremy Swayman the other night. Puts together a phenomenal campaign. Stops the Penguins to the tune of 28 saves on 29 shots. But still loses the game because the offense was not there. Went up against a Tristan Jarry and got shut out there. So tough outing for him. I mean, you talk about fantasy points on DraftKings, 16.1 on FanDuel, 18 points, for giving up just that one goal, and that's without the win bonus as well. So got to feel bad for him. And certainly, a player, I think, to watch moving forward and what they want to do into the rest of the season here.
Yeah, and I think Swayman is making a real good case as goalie of the future here in Boston with Rask and Halak as pending UFAs. You wonder if they're going to sign one and move off the other one. They're both in their mid-30s, and so they'll have a new look with Swayman in the mix next year. I'm a firm believer in that. The Buffalo Sabres look like they're locking up the 8th spot in the East Division. No surprise to any of us. They went 1-3 last week. Dustin Tokarski is a career AHL goalie, and unfortunately he's been pressed into action, getting the 3 starts last week. But there was some news because Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, aren't you glad I got that name, AJ, instead of you, had made his NHL debut. He allowed four goals in his first start. He's another big goalie from Finland. I haven't heard that formula before in the NHL. Have you? It seems to be a factory. They're really trotting out some good ones, and maybe he's the latest to go in that direction, and the Sabres certainly have to hope so. They have to pin their hopes on something over here. Reinhardt has been a guy who's bucked the trend in terms of a down year. He's had a nice season, picking up 4 goals and 1 assist last week. Arttu Ruotsalainen, I don't think he's any relation to the fellow with the same last name on the back end. He got 2 goals for them last week. Speaking of the defense, Dahlin with 1 goal and 2 assists. They're expecting him to produce like that on a regular basis, but it's been fits and starts this season, and that's been part of the problem here. Jeff Skinner's up to about $1.5 million per goal scored so far on the year, AJ, with the goal that he scored last week. He needs to get 3 to get down to $1 million per, so it's still a pricey thing there with one of the worst contracts maybe in the NHL landscape. Dylan Cousins is another guy that offers some hope for the future with 2 helpers, a young forward here that I saw a lot when he was in Canadian junior hockey play and a star on Team Canada's most recent junior entry as well. I have a good feeling about the third line here in general, AJ. Cousins is a guy we talked about. Ruotsalainen showing well. And Anders Bjork moved over from Boston, and he's fit right in here and contributed offensively already. So it's not all bleak and darkness here for the Sabres in the future, but there's a few names for you to consider long range.
Well, just to throw it out there, Paul, he's still not the worst in the league. Some of your most expensive cost per goal guys right now are some defensemen here. Marc-Edouard Vlasic coming in at $7 million for each goal. Obviously, he has a number of assists, so his cost per point is a little bit more manageable. But there's still some guys in the league sporting worse cost per goal numbers than Skinner. But he's not far off. You know, one name that surprises me on here. And obviously, he's dealing with that injury. But Jack Eichel comes in pretty high on that list with just 2 goals himself So that's a $5 million per goal cost for Buffalo. And the one thing I'll say about the Sabres is, you know, I hope people around there are tempering expectations, because Lukanen is only the latest in a string of guys that are expected to be the next heir apparent here. Linus Omark was that guy at one point. There were a couple names before him. And really, this has been a questionable position for them since Ryan Miller left for you know, a number of years ago. Obviously, before that, they had the Dominator, Dominic Hasek. I'll always get a chance to bring him up if opportunity presents, one of my favorite players of all time. In Carolina, another good week for them that keeps them atop the Central, 2-0-2. So at least they just continue to rack up points. You know, even if they lose, they're doing it in extra innings or shootouts. And so they're getting the points they need, which is why they're the only team right now in that division to have shored up a playoff spot as they lead the way. It probably won't be too long until Florida and Tampa join them on that list. But for now, Carolina, the one team that's locked that up. And a lot of that has to do with Nedeljkovic, three games, two wins, seven goals allowed here. Look, I think we have to continue to talk about the fact that who is this team going to start come game one of the postseason? I mean, at this point, Nedeljkovic has just looked so good. And Mrazek is continuing, you know, he's been out for a while with that injury. Like, I just don't see how you can't go with Nedeljkovic. It's going to be a tough call for Rod Brindamore, but I think you have to, right?
Yeah, I would agree with you. Nedeljkovic really has shone when given the opportunity. Three game starts last week, two wins and seven goals against. You got a chance to win with a goalie keeping the goals against under three, and he's managed to do that pretty steadily all season long. And with that high-octane offense in front of him, it's going to be a tough out in Carolina. In Calgary, they're hoping to be a tough out, but they only went 2-1 last week and lost a critical game against Montreal last night. Jacob Markstrom been carrying the load there. Three games played last week, two wins, and again, seven goals against in total. Up front, Milan Lucic got two goals and marked 1,000 games in his career. For a guy who plays the game as rough and tumble as he does, I was kind of surprised to see that he was up near 1,000 games overall. It's been hard miles, but boy, there may not be a tougher player in the NHL for my money, AJ. Elias Lindholm, two goals for him. Derek Ryan, three assists. Andrew Mangiapane had a fine year, and he added to it with a three-point week last week. Sean Monahan is a guy that's come off the mat most recently, as well as Johnny Gaudreau. Monahan with 3 points. The playoff hopes are alive here because he and Gaudreau finally catching fire. Gaudreau, for his part, 9 points in his last seven games played. Picked a great time to get hot for sure, and Monahan too, for that matter. But the trouble spot for me is that they suffered a significant injury on the blue line. Noah Hanifin is out with a shoulder injury, and it could be a big loss, something that might not be short-term either. Nikita Nesterov is a guy who will move into the vacancy in the top four, but he's nowhere near the two-way defenseman that Hanifin is, so big loss in the back end for the Flames.
Well, and I think, the thing with Hanifin, you know, because there's surgery in play, you know, Jake Guentzel had a shoulder issue. I have no idea if it's the same one, but Guentzel missed like 6 months. So if you're talking 6 months from today, to your point, Paul, Hanifin could miss the start of next season, which is obviously a big concern. I'll give a credit where credit is due to Milan Lucic. He's the fourth player from his draft class, the 2006 class, to hit that 1,000 game mark alongside Phil Kessel, Jordan Staal, and Nicholas Backstrom. You know, Nick Foligno is there in the mix. He's got about 50 more games to go. I would imagine he'll be back for another season. I don't know if he'll be back with your guys, but with the Leafs, but I think he'll be back playing somewhere next season. In Chicago, you know, a disappointing week for them, 1-2. Malcolm Subban, for whatever reason, gets three of the starts, one win, six goals allowed. I don't understand starting Malcolm Subban ever, because I'm not a fan, to say the least. I just think he's a career backup, and using him as a starting netminder is not a recipe for success. But look, when it comes to Chicago, I think the biggest news to talk about is the retirement of Andrew Shaw. Won the Cup with them twice, played in 544 career games, 246 points along the way. You know, we said when that latest injury came up and it came out that it was another head injury concussion, and we said it probably had and should have been the end. And fortunately, he's making the right choice, you know, based on his doctor's recommendation to call it a career. I saw yesterday between Shaw, potentially Jonathan Toews, this is a team that could have upwards of $21 million available from LTIR contracts. That is just insane to think that they would have that much ability to go over the cap, because, you know, they've got Toews at 10, Seabrook on there at 6.8. Shaw adds another almost 4. You know, Paul, to your point, I think it was last week, maybe the week before, as to whether or not we need to reshuffle the deck here. There may be teams that look at this and say, whoa, $21 million in LTIR relief. Like, that's just insane. But, you know, Chicago's a big market city. They can pay the bills, you know, the real dollar bills. So I guess if they can make it work, right?
Yeah, I guess that's a consideration. But I really believe that Jonathan Toews will come off that list. I've been seeing reports that he is feeling better, but I don't think he's in line for a return this season. He's pointing himself at a return next season at full health and really feeling optimistic about it. The DeHaan injury, hip injury, certainly have touched on that theme earlier with a couple other guys we've named. It affords Nikita Zadorov a shot at more minutes. And the guy is huge. The guy can skate. He's got some skills. Never really put it together, AJ. I think he should try to find some motivation here and really reach for a higher level of play that I think is in him. And I'm curious to see how he reacts maybe with a heavier workload going forward here. The Columbus Blue Jackets this season, we already touched on it on the top, becoming rapidly a write-off, a tire fire of epic proportions when you consider the run-ins that Tortorella's had. I think the funeral dirge is already playing for him in his coaching tenure in Columbus. But meanwhile, on the ice last week, they went 0-3-1. Oliver Bjorkstrand, trying to rise above the fray, produced 5 points, a heroic performance in light of what's going on here, I'll say. Cam Atkinson chipped in with 2 assists, Max Domi with 2 helpers. Eric Robinson is a guy who is getting a look at the top line left wing minutes and making the best of the audition with 2 goals and 1 helper last week. Michael Delzato was picked up near the trade deadline, and he's formed an interesting pairing with Seth Jones. We know that Werenski's out for the rest of the year, so pairing another offensive minor player with Jones is probably a pretty good idea here. Merzlikins could see a run of games going forward because Jonas Korpisalo suffered a lower body injury. The duration of his absence is unknown at this time.
I just can't believe how often those two guys seem to get hurt. Like, yeah, they cannot go any length of time having both of those netminders healthy. It's you know, really strange. I would consider some sort of you know, seance or sage ceremony to try and get the bad juju out of those goalie lockers or something, because they're definitely struggling. Look, this bad week again just further in my mind enforces the fact that we've seen 3 in-season coaching changes in Buffalo, Calgary, and Montreal. And I just have to imagine, you know, at this point, you're probably going to finish out the season, right, with Torts. But I just can't imagine that they are going to keep him once the season wraps up. It just, you know, clearly he doesn't have the locker room, or at least that's what it seems from the outside looking in. Obviously, we're not in there day-to-day. Maybe he still does. But I will just be surprised that John Tortorella would be back with them next season. Now, how long he goes without a job is probably pretty short. The NHL coaching carousel seems to only include the same people over and over again. We saw that with Calgary firing Jeff Ward and bringing back Daryl Sutter. So I would imagine he'll get a job somewhere pretty quickly. But, you know, it's one to watch, that's for sure. In Colorado, they played just 2 games last week, went 1-1. As they continue to get guys back from the COVID protocol list, they had, you know, Grubauer seems to be getting closer. He did not play last night. It looks like maybe Friday at the earliest for him, although no official confirmation. They're also without Mikko Rantanen and Jonas Donskoi. But perhaps longer impact for them is the fact that Brandon Saad suffered a lower body injury that's going to keep him out 2 to 4 weeks. That's pretty much the rest of the regular season here. Maybe a last game or two, but certainly a significant injury when you consider that he's got 15 goals on the year for them. You know, his name doesn't come up as much because he's not on that power line of Landeskog, MacKinnon, and Rantanen. But certainly he provides plenty of depth scoring for them, and his absence will no doubt be felt by them.
And you know what? I want to mention Cale Makar, AJ. He's quietly starting to score like we expect him to score all the time. He's almost at a point per game, 34 points in 35 games played, among the NHL scoring leaders, but you're not hearing him being talked about because, quite frankly, he hasn't played the games that some of the others have played. He's only 11 points behind Adam Fox for the league lead, in fact, but playing 14 games less than Fox, you can project that he'd be right there with him if he had played the full slate of games. So not to sleep on Makar going forward. Keep an eye on his price in DFS play. If he's not priced among the big boys, I think he's got to be in your lineup the way he's going right now. The Dallas Stars, they're fifth in the Central Division, coming off a 3-1 week, trying to stay relevant in the race and trying to get healthier along the way. Anton Khudobin has had his issues with health, but he was in the nets for three of the starts last week, allowing six goals against in total and collecting two wins. Joe Pavelski has been quiet for much of the last few weeks, but led the offense last week with a pair of goals. And Miro Heiskanen on defense with a pair of assists. These are two guys that should be central to their attack night in and night out, and they're going to need them to play that way if they're going to hope to be a factor in the playoff race. Robertson has had a nice run now, 10 points in his last seven games, a scoring streak that was buoyed by a five-point week last week. Dickinson with two helpers, Rupe Hintz with 3 points. You get the idea. The offense has been pretty spread out and consistent over the last 7 days, and John Klingberg with a couple of helpers on the back end has been part of that as well. The second line has a different look, though, most recently, AJ, than what we've seen all season. Ben has moved over from wing position to play in the middle of Dickinson and Gurianov. I like that idea. All three guys capable offensive scorers and some good size there as well. So I'd say keep an eye on them and maybe look for stack opportunities if they get on a heater offensively. Good news from the IR, Tyler Seguin is practicing with the team. The return date for him is uncertain. I think a lot of it's going to have to do with how relevant they can be in a playoff hunt. They might shut him down if they fall off, but if they're in contention and he can make a difference, you can bet he's going to try and be a factor going forward. And Joel Kiviranta is another guy who's been sidelined for a while, could return to practice with the club next week. So the cavalry is coming on the sidelines. Can they stay relevant in the playoff hunt? That's the key here right now to determining maybe how quickly these guys get reinstated.
Well, and I think if they get to a point here in the next couple of games where they're not right there next to Nashville, they're 2 points back with two games in hand, you're going to see Rupe Hintz be shut down too. He's been basically a game time decision every single game for the last, you know, almost month, it feels like. And look, this is a team that I think, like, this is the argument right here, Paul, for what we've been talking about for a number of years on this show, is to go to a 3-point regulation win system.
Right.
The Dallas Stars lead the league in overtime losses with 12. And they're only 2 points back, as I said, of Nashville. Nashville only has two overtime losses. Meanwhile, they have six more wins. Now, if you look at regulation wins, it's a difference of three. Some quick math here I did. I think you'd be looking at, instead of a 2-point difference, you'd be looking at a 5-point difference here. So it's not significant, but it is enough to change things up a little bit. And I really think it's something that would be good for the NHL overall to avoid, you know, those last minute of games where it's just like, nobody's really trying here because let's just both get a point and then we'll settle it in overtime. Whereas if it was, you know, if there were more points on the line by getting that regulation win and having that worth 3 points, I really think this is a time to do that. And this team is a case for that. In Detroit, they're not a case for much of anything this year other than what maybe bad hockey looks like. They went 1-1-2 last week, eighth in the Central. Thomas Greiss taking three of those starts, picking up one win, five goals allowed. Look, in terms of DFS, there are opportunities and a couple of guys that you could snag. You know, Vrana last week had four goals. Glendening had three. Gagne had one. So there are opportunities here. But I think the biggest thing for me is to stay away from the net minding here. I don't think they're racking up too many wins, but if you pick the right spot and the right matchup, they do have some talented guys that could pick up a point here or there. And they're not going to be heavily, you know, the drafted percentage on most of these guys is probably going to be pretty low. So it could be the, you know, the boost you need in those tournament competitions.
Well, the Oilers are certainly getting a boost from their best players, AJ. In the past week, Connor McDavid, 2 goals and 4 assists last week, and a hat trick and a masterful performance last night against Winnipeg. They had a light schedule last week, 1-1 in the two games, but going forward, they're going to be a lot busier than that. So you can expect to see Connor McDavid highlights in store for you in the coming weeks if he plays like he is right now. Boy, that makes Edmonton a scary proposition. I know they're not the deepest club in the league, but when Dreisaitl and McDavid are cooking, you got to look out here, and he really put on a show. Jesse Puljujärvi is thriving on his wing of late. 2 goals and 1 helper last week, tying his career high in goals, and finally looking like a player they thought they drafted 5 years ago. That's like found money for the Oilers, I think. They've been waiting on him, and he's starting to deliver the goods. On defense, Dmitry Kulikov is another guy that they hope would make a difference. He made his team debut on Monday night. Adding this key veteran presence on the blue line could be another big move for the Oilers down the stretch. Behind the top two stars at center, there's no real options that have emerged in the middle of the ice here. 21-year-old Ryan McLeod might be a guy that they'll look to in the third line center position. He was a point-of-game guy in the AHL and made his debut last week, so we'll keep an eye on him going forward. Interesting to note that McDavid and Dreisaitl are again on separate lines, and DFS players need to know who are playing on their wing, so keep an eye on the RotoWire lineup depth chart on a daily basis whenever the Oilers suit up, because the cheap DFS plays could wind up being some of the wingers that play with these two superstars.
Well, in Florida, the biggest news, despite a 3-1 week, is, you know, the fact that they've had, you know, the second coming of Marty Brodeur, apparently getting his first, you know, win in Spencer Knight. Look, it's way too early. Like, it was a good performance, don't get me wrong. 33 saves on 34 shots, like, it is a good performance, but you're talking about a 20-year-old netminder coming into the league, you know, for the first time. And let's be clear on who the opponent was in this game. We're talking about Columbus. It's not like you faced a Tampa that, you know, with a full complement of Stamkos and Kucherov or anything like that. So I think we need to just kind of tamp down expectations here, in part for himself, right? Like, I think it's not good for him to suddenly be thrust into the spotlight. You know, I thought it was interesting that last night they decided to go with Chris Driedger. They're still giving him opportunities. Unfortunately, he picked up an injury and had to leave the game. I think that probably has more to do with long-term planning. Not that he can't win them games now, but the more opportunities they could give Driedger to feature at the end of the season here, one, you're giving Bobrovsky some rest, and you're creating or generating more market for Driedger in the offseason. So I definitely think it was maybe a long-term look at the future. Hopefully the injury is not serious so that they can, you know, consider that. But Sergei Bobrovsky will obviously be their starter come opening night. And I would imagine that heading into next season, you know, see, this is the thing. I was going to say heading into next season, I would expect Spencer Knight to be their number two, but you're not going to have him sit behind Bob every night. Like, right? Like, why would you have him sit there not playing games? So I just think that doesn't make sense in the grand scheme of things. Maybe that's what they do. I don't know, Paul. What do you think?
Well, I do think it's decision time here, and you wonder. I think maybe Chris Driedger is going to be clamoring for an opportunity elsewhere, and that might make their decision a little bit easier if he says, I don't want to be in a backup anymore. I think I've done enough, and I'm looking for a bigger challenge, maybe a number one opportunity somewhere else. So I think he might be able to force his own case and change the dynamic here. And maybe Spencer Knight does agree to stick around and be an understudy to Bobrovsky and getting the short end of the stick, because he's a young guy anyway. He's got a lot of runway here, and maybe a year under his belt as a backup guy before he takes the reins is a good idea. I mean, way too young to put the weight of a big goalie load on him, in my opinion. So I think it could sort itself out by Driedger making a call to get out. I'm also interested in highlighting Sam Bennett here. He's been probably the best addition of any club at the trade deadline, added 4 points to his total last week, and the big boys are scoring. Barkov with 4 goals and Huberto with 7 points. They got a lot to be pleased about in Florida as a contending club of this division, and their big guns are firing right now. The LA Kings, 7th in the West, 1-2 last week. Peterson taking the load in net over Quick with 3 game starts, 1 win, 8 goals against in those 3 outings. Anze Kopitar's had a fine year here, but not enough support to stay relevant in the playoff hunt at this point. Even Drew Doughty has had a nice offensive season. It's not to say some of the youngsters aren't making waves here. We've been impressed at times by several of them. Certainly Alex Iofalo has turned in enough of a performance to get a long-term contract. But guys like Adrian Kempe and Blake Lizotte have performed in fits and starts, showing enough flashes that they can be guys that can be part of a top six here. I'm looking for more from Andreas Athanasiou. I think he's miscast as a third-line winger here, AJ. I know they're trying to stretch the offense a little bit, but I'd like to see him part of the top six, and I think he has a higher ceiling than he's shown so far. So that's my sense of the LA Kings. What about you?
Well, I'll just jump into Minnesota, moving from the bottom of the league to the top here. 4-0 last week on a 7-game winning streak. And it's all on the back of Cam Talbot, who really has rediscovered something here. You know, we talked about this early in the season, that if Talbot could return to being that player that, you know, logged, you know, 73 games, 42 wins for Edmonton back in 2016-17, that he could really be, you know, kind of the piece that this club needed to try and turn things around here. I certainly expect...
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
A little bit more of a divided workload between him and Kaapo Kähkönen. But Talbot's made the decision for them. I mean, you look at his own run of performance here. He hasn't lost in regulation in his last 7 starts, 6-0-1 with a 2.12 goals against average over that time. It's just too good of numbers. Why would you not want him, you know, taking every single night? And clearly this is a guy that thrives on a heavy workload. And so I would expect to see plenty of him heading into the stretch. And I think it's pretty clear to me that he'll be their starter come, game one of the postseason.
Over in Montreal, this team is clinging to fourth place. They had a 1-3 week last week, won a key game last night against Calgary, salvaging at least one game of that trio out in the Western Canada, key set to may define the postseason finishing standings here when we get to the end. But I think Montreal's not yet home and cooled out. And you got to help me out, partner, to find any offense outside of the names of Toffoli and Anderson. There's nobody here that's really lighting it up. They combined with 5 goals on the week. Tatar with 2 helpers. Peachy with 2 assists. There's only points in the last 7 games as he's really cooled off. Corey Perry, there's been some fits and starts from him. Really good value for the money that they paid him. Another couple of assists there. And Eric Gustafsson chipped in with a couple of helpers. Looking good offensively at least, but still very suspect on the back end. The big news here is Cole Caulfield debuting last night. I'm sure you have more to say about him than I know, but suffice it to say, they're expecting him to be instant offense. He looked pretty good last night in a limited role, and they're giving him a top six opportunity, which I like to see. When you talk about an offensive talent that comes up from the AHL, I don't like it when they put him on fourth line duty. This guy's getting a chance to be on the power play and top six, and they're clearly expecting a lot of production out of him. Injury concerns remain with Carey Price. There's no timeline for his return from concussion. I'm certain that they would like to get him in as soon as possible to solidify that playoff spot as soon as possible too, but they're really walking a tightrope with him, and that's got to be a big concern going forward. They're only 4-0 since Gallagher's injury. He won't difficulty back in the rest of the regular season, and that's they're really fighting it right now, and they got to get their act together if they want to get to the postseason. I'm not sure they will.
Well, and one of the problems is they brought in Eric Staal to provide, you know, some center depth and so maybe some deeper scoring here. But you look at it, since he joined the team, he has just 2 goals. And perhaps more concerning is that in 6 of his 13 games with the club, he failed to record a single shot on goal, which is just strange to me. I don't know why you would, why he's not putting pucks on the net, and perhaps even more concerning is last night, he played less than 10 minutes of ice time last night. Like, what are we doing here? Why did we go out and get Eric Staal if you're not going to, not going to use him, if he's, not going to produce? I thought it was a great addition. At the time, I was a little bummed that Pittsburgh didn't make a run at him. This was obviously before they got Jeff Carter. I'm very satisfied with that. But, Eric Staal was one player that I thought that they should target. And looking at it now, I'm very glad that they didn't.
Can you imagine the Canadiens fans in the end of the schedule? They're finishing on the 12th of May, I think. And Calgary and Vancouver face off 4 times after that date to see if either one of them has a shot remaining. So if they can get within hailing distance, there's going to be a lot of nervous Nellies in La Belle Provence. Partner, we're going to take a few minutes for some words from our sponsors at this point. We'll be back with a look at the remaining teams in our weekly deep dive into key information about each roster. Stick with us. You're listening to Puckcast. We'll be back in a bit.
Welcome back to Puckcast.
Okay.
Sorry, Paul.
No, AJ, I'll throw to you. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about what's happening in New Jersey?
Yeah, with the Devils, 0-3-1 this last week, 10-game winless streak, about what we would expect from this team at the start of the season. Now, they have played some tough games. They aren't as easy of an out as you would expect, given the fact that they're on a 10-game winless streak. They've gotten production out of a couple guys like Wood, 2 goals, 3 assists, Hughes with 2 goals, Butcher, 4 assists. So there's guys that are producing, but certainly the net mining has been less than stellar. Mackenzie Blackwood was out for a pair of games against the Penguins. And Dell started 1 game and got the hook for Wedgwood. Wedgwood started 1 game and got the hook for Dell. So they, in both games, they ended up flipping these guys. And it just was a bad, bad read for net mining there. I think what we'll see moving forward is we'll see plenty of Mackenzie Blackwood once he's cleared to play. But for now, it's just a struggle with this team. And obviously, they're looking for things to turn around in future seasons here.
In Nashville, this club we highlighted off the top, they're trying to stay relevant in the race and making a run for it. They're 2-0-1 last week and now in fourth place in their division. UC Saros carrying the mail in the Nets. 3 game starts, 2 wins, 8 goals against in those that trio of games. Luke Kunin leading the offense with 4 points. Michael Granlund with 5 and Kalle Järnkrok with 3. None of these guys are big-name players around the league, but certainly have been staples for the Nashville club offensively for much of this season. And they were joined last week by Ryan Johansson, and we've been maligning the 1-2 punch in that center here forever. So whenever we get a chance to say something good, we will. And Johansson had a 3-point week, one of the big ticket centers finally coming through, and he's now on a season high 3-game point streak. That kind of tells you why we've been on his case all season the way we have. They've got a shot in the arm on the back end with Ryan Ellis's healthy return. Once again, rating as a very good underpriced DFS option on defense. He had 3 assists to lead the back end in scoring last week. Sadly, there's no update for their sideline star up front, Philip Forsberg, and his upper body injury, unless you know something I don't, AJ, but they could certainly use him in the offense. Tolvanen has returned to the left wing role in the top line in his place, tallying 2 points after his own 7-game stint on the IR recently. Be good to see these guys both in the lineup at the same time, and that would certainly give their chances for the postseason a big shot in the arm.
On Long Island, it was an inconsistent week with a 1-1-1 record for the Islanders. You know, the net mining here, you have to start to question if they need to maybe give a heavier workload to Simeon Varlamov. Played in 2 games, went 1-0-1, and that's giving up 1 goal on 54 shots. I mean, so that's a tough loss, obviously, to lose 1-0 to the Capitals there. And then, you know, they give Sorokin the game against Washington the following game, and he just got rocked. 6 goals allowed on 30 shots. I don't really understand the call. It wasn't a back-to-back, so I think it's just too hard to get Sorokin into games. And when you look at where they are in the standings and trying to, you know, hold on to a spot here, you know, I think they're fine in terms of the playoffs, but look, I would rather be sitting in the 2 spot and at least be able to play at home instead of the 3. I certainly wouldn't want to drop to the 4 and have to, you know, travel to Pittsburgh if they end up winning. So I just don't understand the choice to put Sorokin in that game, and they obviously paid for it.
New York Rangers are 5th in the Eastern Division. I think they're too far out to make a run, AJ, but they went 2-2 last week, 12 goals against in those 4 games. So right around a 3 per game, obviously, quick math there. Shesterkin getting 3 of the starts, 1 win on the week. Mika Zibanejad is a guy who's been really on fire in fits and starts. Last week was another plus week for him with 6 points. Rooney added two goals. Kako with 2 goals and 1 helper in his early career development. I've seen really good signs out of him most recently. Fox on the back end leading the league in scoring for a defenseman. 5 points to his ledger last week. Artemi Panarin, a must start in DFS play when they're playing the lesser lights in this division. He picked up 4 points last week. Same with Buknevich. Hedl had 3 and Lafreniere with 3. You can see they're getting the offense from everywhere, and a lot of these names are youngsters who are really moving along the learning curve in the NHL. Colin Blackwell, another one who might fit that description, left the last game in discomfort and has been held pointless in his last 4 starts. So we should keep an eye out to see maybe if Kako moves past him on the depth chart into a scoring line role on a regular basis. Lafreniere is getting some reps with Zibanejad, and that's really good for his development. We're seeing more consistent scoring out of him most recently. And I already mentioned Adam Fox leading the league in scoring among defensemen. That's a great and unexpected development for a rebuilding franchise on Broadway.
I'm really interested to see how the voters determine the Norris Trophy this year, because look, you know, Fox, you look at the guys that are in the top, you've got Hedman, Carlson, Shea Theodore, Dougie Hamilton, Chris Letang. All those are playoff teams. The Rangers are likely not. So are they going to factor that in or not? You look at power play points, half of Fox's production has come on the power play. And he's got a plus 23, which, you know, we talked about plus and minus can be a bit overrated. But when it's that skewed to one side, I think it's really telling you something about his play. So I think Fox is certainly a candidate. I would be shocked if he wasn't at least nominated. But I wonder if he can win it when he's not playing on a playoff team, if they factor that in or not. I have no idea. So it's something that I will certainly be watching and very curious to see what they do, because cases could be made for you know, John Carlson has 10 goals. You know, Hedman is only 2 points behind Fox in the scoring here, but their plus minus is nowhere near Adam Fox's. So just something interesting to watch and see what the voters do with that one. In Ottawa, a 2-1 week, but the bigger concern continues to be the health among the netminders. Matt Murray did start 3 games this last week, picked up 2 wins, but he's gotten hurt again. They are already without Joey Decord for the rest of the season. Anton Forsberg is also dealing with an injury. So it's Marcus Hogberg and Filip Gustavsson. Look, I don't think they thought they were going to be a competitive team this year, but they brought in Matt Murray to be their number one guy this year and moving forward. And now suddenly we're in the second stint of injury time for him. And at this point, it's hard to say that he's not injury prone because he dealt with this in Pittsburgh. It's why they kept, Marc-Andre Fleury around as long as they did, because, you know, and Fleury got injured a couple times too over that stretch. But Matt Murray just seems to be somewhat injury prone here. And I think it's a concern for an Ottawa team that's rebuilding. And yeah, they didn't go over the top in terms of number of years, but 4 years committed to Murray, if you know, you don't want him spending all of that on LTIR. I think it's something of a concern for them moving forward.
And AJ, we already talked about the Flyers, sixth in the East, big surprise to both of us in terms of looking at where we had them projected. Carter Hart's season from hell is the central reason why. It's now marked by a knee injury that has kept him out of the last five games. And again, no clear timetable for his return. Alex Lyon has been called up and allowed 9 goals over 2 recent starts for his part. So goaltending, a big concern here in Philadelphia again. Right winger on the second line, Travis Konecny, though, is another guy that I want to highlight for the wrong reasons. He's having a big-time subpar year, only 1 assist in his last 8 games played. He was very central to this offense last season, and they got to have all hands on deck if their goaltending is going to struggle the way it has. And he's a big reason also why this team is not where it was expected to be. Wade Allison is a big winger who is getting his first taste of NHL life. Fits the Flyers' prototypical mold, a big, rangy guy with some good hands, they say. He has a goal in 6 games played, now listed as right wing on the third line. We'll see if he gets more reps and maybe scoring line opportunity before this regular season is out. After a nice start to his season, Scott Laughton parlayed that into a 5-year, $15 million extension, but he's now mired in a 19-game scoreless streak. I wonder if Flyers brass is rethinking that one.
Yeah, I mean, the concern there, up until Sunday's game here, he went 4 games without a single shot. He's still dishing out some hits, getting a few blocks. So he rarely puts up a 0 in terms of DFS contests. But maybe the 5 shots that he recorded against New Jersey, maybe that's a turnaround for him, and he can start heading in the right direction. Speaking of heading in the right direction, Pittsburgh Penguins 4-0 last week. Tristan Jarry, 3 games, 3 wins, 6 goals allowed. All the names you expect are producing. The top line here is pretty much unstoppable at this point. You've got Russ, 3 goals, 2 assists. Crosby, 3-3. Gensel, 1 goal, 5 assists. And Gensel picking up the lone goal for the Penguins in that crucial win over Boston. I think the biggest question is, and this is a strange question to be asking, is what do you do with Evgeny Malkin when he comes back? I think the chemistry that you're seeing right now from what is making up the second line of Jared McCann, Jeff Carter, and Jason Zucker, I just don't see how you break that up. So I think what you have to essentially do is you put Malkin back with Kapanen. They were great together. And then I don't know who you stick on their other wing, but I don't think it should be Jared McCann or Jason Zucker. You're clearly not going to move Brian Rust off that top wing. So, that's going to be one to watch in terms of DFS, because whoever ends up in that spot could have a pretty good assignment. Could be Evan Rodriguez. He showed a little bit of something for a few games when he was playing with Carter on that second line. Maybe Sam Lafferty or Zach Aston-Reese could be a candidate, although his finishing has been questionable at best during times. So it's a big question mark for me, is what do you do? Now, if they get Brandon Tanev back at the same time, that's a guy that I think could really fit there. You would have Malkin flanked by 2 of the fastest guys on the team, and Kapanen on one side and Tanev on the other. So a lot of question marks there, but there are good problems to have for the Penguins as they continue to roll right now.
No wonder you're smiling so broadly. It is nice problems to have in Pittsburgh. In San Jose, they're breaking in a new goalie, and aren't you glad I get to say his name? Josef Kojenash is the guy who has made his debut in San Jose colors. I know his pronunciation, not from the NHL pronunciation guide, but I watched the last couple of broadcasts from San Jose games to learn that one, partner. He has recorded his first win in 6 appearances with last night's surprise victory over the visitors, and from Arizona, and he looked good to me, AJ. So maybe they're finding somebody who will challenge Marty Jones going forward. Certainly, he's had another up and down year in the Nets, and that's a big reason why they're on the outside looking in. They also have issues with injuries. Veteran right wingers Nieto and LeBanc are sidelined right now. Noah Gregor is getting some top 6 minutes and scored his first of the season last week. Ditto for Joaquin Blitchfield. Yeah, folks, it's clearly audition time here in San Jose, and those are a couple of names, three names to watch going forward.
Another team dealing with some injuries is the St. Louis Blues. They had to go without Colton Parayko or Vince Dunn last night, and certainly that's going to stretch their defense, on top of the fact that they have gone a couple games in a row here playing seven defensemen rather than the usual 12-6 formation. Steve Santini making his Blues debut for the club after getting promoted. So I find that very interesting that they're going to trust their, you know, going to the deep of the deep. They've got two defensemen out of the lineup, and yet they still lined up seven of those guys. I think that's kind of a scathing review in my mind for guys like Kyle Clifford, Zach Sanford, Mackenzie McEachum, even, you know, Jacob De La Rose. Like, the team would rather use arguably their ninth defenseman, if you factor in, you know, your six plus Parayko and Dunn, and then another guy, instead of you in the lineup. I would obviously be a little upset by that. Torrey Krug has been a little banged up. He did play last night, so that's certainly a good sign for them. But the fact of the matter is, he was a game time call heading into the contest, and you wonder if that continues to linger, they might consider shutting him down if they get too far behind in the playoff race.
In Tampa, they are third in the Central Division. I don't think they can fall any lower than that realistically, so they're probably just going to coast into the postseason and scare the heck out of whoever finishes second, I think, is their goal in the first round, AJ. Vasilevsky getting a lot of work in the Nets. He's a workhorse, though. We forecast this at the beginning of the season that he'd be right at the top of the league in terms of games played, and he's had another Vezina-caliber season, adding three game starts, two wins, and eight goals against to the Totals last week. Braden Point's the guy who shook off a bit of a slump with a five-point week, and that's a great sign for a team that's missing a couple of its bigger offensive pieces aside from him. Andre Palat, two goals and four assists for his part as well, playing great in a top-six role and getting there with a cheap price tag in DFS play more often than not. So I keep an eye on him, and I use him regularly. I'll say that. And he's been very productive for me, as those totals imply. Blake Coleman with a couple of goals. Victor Hedman, again, in line for a conversation in the Norris Trophy. I will give my Norris Trophy winning candidate very, very shortly. When we get to his team, it hasn't come yet, AJ, so you can almost guess who I might be picking there, but we'll leave it for suspense for a little more. I wonder if the Bolts are interested in pushing for first place, or are they just going to coast and wait for Kucherov and Stamkos? I think that's the recipe that I forecast the rest of the way. And like I said, Point on fire, 9 points in his last eight games played. Savard on the defense. David Savard is getting acclimatized here with a heavy workload, 20 minutes per game. He hasn't chipped in with any points and is only a minus three in the seven games so far. He'll get better, folks, and he'll be relevant on their power play before the season is out.
I'll get us to Toronto as quick as I can, Paul, and I'll keep my comments short because I'm sure you have plenty to add about the Maple Leafs after a 2-1 week for them. Obviously, you know, the biggest watch here is, you know, how much work is Freddie Anderson doing on a nightly basis? Yesterday it looked like he took a twirl on the ice, got out there. He's hoping to be back before the playoffs, at least according to reports coming out yesterday. That lower body injury has been clarified as a knee issue that it sounds like Anderson was playing through for a little bit and finally decided it was best to shut it down. So I think we'll see a lot of Jack Campbell down the stretch, but they did bring in David Rittich at the deadline. So he could grab a few starts as well along the way. Paul, you give me the rest of the rundown about your Leafs.
Well, I think you're going to see all three of those goalies in the mix in the last nine games that they have on the schedule. I think it is. And Freddie will probably play the last two, I'll suggest. that will have to do some cap manipulations to get him into those starts. So you might see some players getting rested and other players who are on emergency call moved down. They'll find a way to get that done, and Freddie will play. And I think he'll be the starter in one of the first two games that they play in the postseason. I think they might be one of those teams that alternates goalies in the postseason run. It's kind of going to be kind of a win and you're in kind of situation. But I have every confidence that Freddie's going to come back and be a factor before the season is out. I'd like to talk about Mitch Marner, AJ. I haven't really spent any time at length talking about him all season long, but I think it's time to really notice that he deserves consideration for a couple of the league's signature awards. Certainly the MVP of the team, you might want to make a case for Austin Matthews above him because he's lapped the field offensively in goal scoring and plays that 200-foot game, but his running mate Marner has been no slouch. He's actually second to Connor McDavid in terms of minutes played per game by any forward in the NHL, and he's done it in power play, he's done it in PK, and he's done it in regular ice time. I think I make a strong case for him being a Selke Award nominee and a Lady Bing nominee as well. He's just a top-flight winger who plays in all situations and does it with great, great style and flair. And I think it's time for somebody to start banging the drum for this guy. He's been that good. I also want to say some nice words about John Tavares. He's been maligned as far as the big contract is always something that comes up in conversation. But it's now 4 weeks that he's been playing very, very good hockey. Three more goals and one helper to his ledger. And he's had a myriad of wingers in his time in Toronto and just continues to score at a point per game pace. It might surprise you to note that he's right on the fringe of the top 20 scorers again. That's what this guy does year in and year out, and that's why he gets the big money that he does. And a quiet, effective leader, never any garbage from him, and he's done some great work off the ice as well. So time to talk about some players that I haven't really spent much time talking about when it comes to the Maple Leafs, and I'm happy to do so. Vancouver Canucks, up next, sixth in the North. They are trying to be relevant in the postseason race. 2-1 was the record last week. They lost a tough one with Ottawa last night. Pearson and Sutter with two goals. Hughes with a goal and three helpers. JT Miller with a goal and three assists. Their offense is coming, folks, and their defense is getting a better look because Braden Holtby is playing his best hockey of the year. Two game starts, two wins, and five total goals against. That's three straight wins for him, and a total of seven goals in those outings. I think he's going to be the guy they lean on as long as they are relevant in the postseason hunt. He's got the hot hand right now, and they got to ride that to fan their fading playoff hopes. I also want to give a nod to Tyler Myers. He's taken on more minutes since his return from the sidelines. Elias Pettersson, though, not likely to rejoin this club, and that's a tough blow for a team that's on the outside looking in right now. They're just hoping to get their flashes forward healthy again, maybe in time for next season. There is some doubt, though, that he has played his last game, according to specialists that he saw last week. He's probably done for this year. And that means the leadership role and the top scoring line role falls to Bo Horvat. He's answered the bell in both cases most recently with 5 points over his last four games played. He's got to keep that up to drag the Canucks as far as he can into the playoff race this season.
Well, in Vegas, they've went 3-0 last week, a 9-game winning streak that has propelled them into first place in the West right now, with a bit of a cushion, not much, but a 4-point cushion on Colorado right now. And look, you got to look at the net mining over this stretch. Robin Leonard, 5-0 over that 9-game win streak, a .928 save percentage, 1.77 goals against average. And those are the worst numbers of the two netminers. Marc-Andre Fleury, 4-0 over that stretch, .942 save percentage and a 1.5 goals against average. A shutout for each of those guys over that stretch. And you would think with those numbers, they're just winning defensively, but they're getting it done on the offensive side of the puck as well. Mark Stone, 3 goals. Marchessault, 5 points last week. Stephenson, 3 points. Shea Theodore, 1 goal and 5 assists as well. And just everything is clicking for the Golden Knights right now. We saw this last year. So this is a team that, when it comes to the postseason, show me something is what I'm going to be looking for out of these guys, because, they got into the playoffs last year and the offense completely dried up and the guys that you would expect to produce just weren't there. And they're going to have to come out and prove it in their opening round series that at this point will likely be against either Arizona or St. Louis.
Well, and I'm going to take the opportunity to tout another guy for a major award, and that's Shea Theodore here, AJ. You mentioned some of the top-scoring defensemen. He's right there, fourth in the league right now, with 40 points heading into action tonight in 44 games, a plus 26, only 14 minutes in penalties, and averaging just about 22 and a half minutes of ice time. He has far surpassed any peers on the blue line, including Alex Pietrangelo, who, quite frankly, hasn't measured up offensively to the numbers that I expected here, and his season has been marred by injury. But I thought Shea Theodore would be threatened by his presence, but instead, he's elevated his game one more level. And I think, for me, he's odds on to challenge Victor Hedman for the Norris Trophy. It's going to come down to one or the other of these two guys. In Washington, the Caps are trying to give your team fits in terms of clinching that top spot. They went 2-0 in a very light week for them. Daniel Sprong getting two goals and fitting in nicely in a top six role. Kuznetsov with a goal and two helpers. Even Brendan Dillon chipped in with two assists, but don't go looking for him in DFS play. He's strictly a defensive defenseman, folks. The key news here, Alex Ovechkin missed a game on the weekend with a lower body injury and is questionable for tonight's game against the Islanders. I don't know if my partner has more information about that, but anytime Ovi's out of the lineup, that's newsworthy, and you want to see who's taking his place to play with one of the better playmaking centers in hockey, regardless of whichever one of the top two guys you like there. They're both considerations in terms of DFS play night in, night out. I mentioned Sprong and Mantha with their possibilities being top line scoring left wingers. If Ovechkin doesn't play, it'll be those two guys that carry the mail offensively from the wing. While Justin Schultz is out with a lower body injury, Trevor Van Riemsdyk has been inserted into the defensive mix. Again, not a guy that's going to threaten offensive totals from the back end, but just keeping an eye out with the injury bug on Schultz, who's been up and down with the Caps all season long in terms of relevance and importance to them. Samsonov has started four of the last six in the Nets and won them all, allowing a total of only seven goals against, so it looks like he's fully recovered from his recent upper body injury as well. So most of the news is good, but you got to be concerned about the captain if he's going to miss any time with the lower body hurt. AJ, you got any information on that?
Well, I think, you look at practice yesterday, Justin Schultz participated in practice but had a no-contact jersey. Obviously, that could change before tonight's game, but I think that's pretty clear indication we won't be seeing him tonight. And Ovechkin was actually, maybe further back. He skated before practice but did not take part in the practice session either way. So I have to imagine that Schultz probably comes back before Ovi, but it could just be a difference in injury type and something along that line. So today is obviously going to be the key. The game day skate will make a lot of determinations there, but I personally would be surprised if either one of those guys gets up into the lineup tonight. Speaking of injuries, the Winnipeg Jets got some bad news yesterday as Nikolaj Ehlers will be shut down for the remainder of the regular season. Now, indications are that he could be ready to go in time for the postseason, which is certainly a good thing for them, but it's a big blow for a team when you consider that Ehlers was one of just, I think it's about, probably expanded a little last night, but of about 25 guys, 23 to be exact, that have 20 or more goals. Nikolaj Ehlers is on that list, second on the team in goals behind Kyle Connor. So that'll be a big loss for them and one that's not going to be easy to overcome. Now you factor in that Adam Lowry picked up an injury as well. Suddenly they've had to really shuffle the lines to the point where, last night they went with Andrew Kopp on the top line with Scheifele and Mason Appleton, while Blake Wheeler played with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Kyle Connor, Stastny anchoring a third line with Matthew Perreault and youngster Christian Vesalainen. So it really completely shuffled the deck for them. And I think it's going to hurt them long term here. Now, is it going to impact their ability to make the playoffs? I certainly don't think so. They'd have to have a pretty steep drop off here, and you'd have to have a Calgary team, almost not lose any games the rest of the way to make a run at it. But could they fall to Montreal? Certainly a possibility, and nobody, I think, in that division wants a first-round clash with the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, but I don't think Winnipeg's looking forward to a first-round clash with Edmonton. The Oilers certainly have had the Jets' number, and I watched that game last night, and boy, the Oilers were just toying with the Jets, and Connor Hellebuyck looked anything but But like Vezina Trophy defending champ with his performance, he's been exposed actually in the last week or so, not playing at the top of his game. And this team was the last team to win to lose two games in a row. They've now lost four in a row in a season worst slump, and it couldn't have come at a worse time. And I think they have to feel a little bit dejected with the way they've looked against the Oilers, and I'm hoping that they can find a way to rebound in the next game, because they have to send a signal that they're not going to be the easy out that they've looked in this particular matchup all season long. They've looked like that for sure. All right, partner, that's our look at the 31 teams and what's new with them. Now it's time to put our money where our mouth is with our DFS plays on FanDuel and DraftKings, and I will defer to you to lead off with your picks on the DraftKings platform for tonight's action in the NHL.
Yeah, so for me, I think there's two games that I'm kind of keying in on tonight. The first is going to be a little bit obvious. Tampa Bay playing against Chicago could be an opportunity for a bunch of the Lightning players to get on the board. So I'm going to take a look at their first line here. And Braden Point for 6,400, Andre Palat for 5,500, relatively discounted options. And then Barry Boulay, I think is a good option. He only comes in at 2,700. Yes, you know, the scoring numbers aren't really there, but he did finally get a goal in that win over Columbus, and I think that could be a sign of some things to come for him. I think it's a good opportunity to use him because he's not going to cost you a lot, and again, you get to stack the entire line across the board there for Tampa Bay. The other team I'm looking at, similar situation, two high-priced guys with a cheaper third player on their wing, and that's going to be Mika Zibanejad with the Rangers. They're going up against the Buffalo Sabres. Again, going high-low in terms of teams playing, you know, the bottom. Zibanejad comes in at 8,100. Pair him up with Pavel Buchnevich for 7,000, rather, and then round it out with Alexis Lafreniere, who, again, he's had a bit of a slow start to the season, but 3,300 as a top line player with those two guys. I think it's hard to imagine him going an extended, you know, time without picking up a point. He has 3 points in his last two games, so a little surprising that the salary hasn't jumped up a little bit there. Outside of those two lines that I'm stacking up, I'm going to look to defense and really just one game that I'm looking at. Mike Matheson has been playing probably some of his best hockey in a very long time for the Penguins right now. Comes in at 3,200, very cheap option here, and has had decent production of late. You look, 2 points in his last four games. You know, he's not blowing the doors off, but he's had a couple of multi-point games in his last couple, and I think it's a good opportunity for him to pick something up. Conversely, I like Charlie McAvoy for 5,500. Look, this will be a Boston team that's going to be motivated after getting shut out in the previous game with Pittsburgh. I was tempted to maybe use some of their more offensive contributions, perhaps looking at the perfection line tonight. I think an argument could certainly be made for them wanting to storm back. But for me, I'm going to take two defenders on opposite sides of the puck here. And in the nets, for me, you know, I just didn't want to pay up for likely Vasilevskiy or Curtis McElhinney if he gets to start. Shesterkin doesn't save you a ton more, but a little bit more savings at 8,300, and obviously a prime matchup at home facing the Buffalo Sabres.
I'm going to agree with you, and that's where I'll start with my picks on FanDuel. I like Shesterkin. He won for me last week when we did this show. He was a key part in putting together a winning lineup again, and I throw him in there for $8,200 against a Buffalo team that is clearly overmatched when you look head-to-head. And I think the Rangers still have something to play for here, and they'll play like it tonight I think an easy victory over the visiting Sabres. I don't have a stack in my lineup today, but I do have the two big boys in Florida dotting the top of my picks, and then a grab bag of players that are in good matchups, and I'll explain all of those situations as we go through it. Alex Barkov, I said I'd use the dynamic duo in Florida. They're not playing on the same line, but I expect them to do well offensively and then get together maybe on a power play goal or two in tonight's matchup against Nashville, so they could both have big nights. Barkov in there for $8,000, my most expensive player on the forward Franks and my most expensive winger in Huberdeau at 7,400. From there, I go down a notch and I find Jack Hughes at center for New Jersey against a Flyers team that is in disarray right now, and I'm counting on a cheap value play to come through for me there. Hughes has averaged just under 10 fantasy points per game, coming in at $4,900 tonight. Taylor Hall goes against your favorite club tonight. I like the way he's fit in Boston on that second scoring line. He'll avoid the top checking units of the Penguins, and I think he has a chance to pad his offensive totals, which have been fairly impressive since he donned the Bruins colors, and I get him for only $6,400, so sign me up. The remaining forwards on my team are Andrei Svechnikov, who's been a top-line winger for the Carolina club all season long, and I guess that they're in a tough matchup tonight, but I do expect him to play first line minutes with Sebastian Aho, and at $5,500 I find that a very good value. And in Tampa, I gotta grab somebody from that lineup. As you suggested, they have a good matchup against Chicago. I fit Andre Palat into the lineup. He's playing first line minutes with Braden Point. Both these guys are red hot right now, and I get Palat for $5,900 to round up my forward complement. On the back end, I look for value around the $4,000 mark. I found two guys. Ryan Ellis, as I mentioned, is playing very well for Nashville, playing a lot of minutes and averaging 10-plus points per game in DFS play. I get him for only $4,000, so I'll take that. And then I rounded out with Miro Heiskanen at $4,400. I think this guy's playing his best hockey of the year right now, and I think he's underpriced at this point. And so I'm pretty confident with my defenseman picks. I already told you Shesterkin is backing them all up. I expect to be in the pay window once again. AJ had a great year in FanDuel play all season long, and happy to talk about our picks every week in this slot. Very excited, too, about the fact that we're nearing the playoffs, and I want your comments before we go on off the air for this week. What do you got to say as a closing thought?
Well, what I'll bring up is something that maybe didn't get as much attention up your way, Paul, but the NHL announced that they have two new partners when it comes to game broadcasts here in the United States. The first one was ESPN that came out a little while ago, which includes the fact that they'll be closing up the NHL Game Center, the online streaming platform, and those games will move to ESPN Plus, which is a big win there. The other partner that was announced yesterday is Turner Sports, or Turner Broadcasting, which means games could be headed to the likes of TNT, TBS. There is a potential link to HBO Max as well, but the big important part is between these two deals, the NHL is expected to be bringing in about $625 million a year in broadcasting rights, which is nearly triple to NBC for the last 10 years. So outline, and I think it's good for the league to have those increased revenues. And certainly, I think a big announcement that NHL games will not be on NBC for the first time in over a decade.
Certainly big news on the broadcast front, and thanks for bringing it out, AJ. They're going to have to find ways to get creative with the money, and hopefully they'll be playing in front of full houses again next season. We certainly hope for that to be the case, and look forward to that. But certainly we got the playoffs around the corner here, and as we look forward to future episodes, our thoughts are going to be mixed in with playoff anticipation, and certainly you can look forward to playoff previews once the postseason does get underway. That wraps up our look around the league. Thanks for listening to the podcast with Statsman and AJ, RotoWire's signature fantasy hockey podcast. Please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. You can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. As always, we invite you to listen into podcasts to get our tips to stay out of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning and research. So long, everybody.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.